Now, non-government organisations deliver an estimated two-thirds of community services in Australia. 20 of the 25 biggest welfare agencies are faith-based. As church attendance has declined, government funding of these agencies has risen. It runs into millions of dollars. It's used mainly for aged care, family support, employment, mental health, youth and homeless programs. But a veteran of the church welfare sector said faith groups need to be very wary of conditions that governments place on this funding. The Reverend Dr. Ray Cleary is the former head of Anglicare. In a new book titled Reclaiming Welfare for Mission, Choices for the Churches, Dr. Cleary warns that governments sometimes require churches to compromise their principles. I spoke with him earlier.
When the global financial crisis occurred, Anglicare, the Uniting Church, Social Services, the Salvation Army and the Catholics all met with the Prime Minister of the time, Kevin Rudd, and Jenny Macklin, and said, look, we are going to feel the brunt of the impact of the global financial crisis. We need $60 million to help us, and we got it. And I think that was a recognition that we were at the coalface. And despite all the challenges that they'd faced, the agencies were certainly getting their act in order and I think providing high quality services, and people were voting with their feet in going to those agencies.
Yes, but you point out in your book, your very interesting book, Reclaiming Welfare for Mission, Choices for the Churches, that all of this money comes with strings attached, though, doesn't it? I mean, you have to adhere to a whole lot of very complex regulations.
Yes, that's true, but I'm not necessarily arguing in the book that all those regulations are bad. I think accountability, transparency in the modern world, in the modern age, is really important, and it's a hard lesson for some in the church, in church agencies, to learn. But I think they are learning, and we're gradually shifting. But it's more in the contractual agreements that I'm highly critical, where things like work for the dole, mutual obligation, those sorts of positions, or even the way in which we treat asylum seekers and refugees, which in effect create a challenge for the church and its mission to the disadvantaged in the context of being open, generous and hospitable to our neighbours.
Because why? Because it rubs up against the church's biblical ethos of being with the least among us. That the,
the government
demands you be stricter with poor people.
Exactly. And we're saying, yes, we need to ensure that we're not ripped off. Everyone needs to behave appropriately. But from my experience, and I think my colleagues would say the same, 98% of disadvantaged people we work with are honest people trying to survive. The percentage who abuse the system can also be replicated amongst the richest in Australia as well.
Well, I want to come to that because in the past 15 years, especially since the election of the Howard government in 1996, there has been a major outsourcing of what were for 30, 40 years government functions. You mentioned job placement, also placement of children in need. These have been farmed back out to the churches. Has that put too much of a burden on church agencies?
It has put too much of a burden, but it's also shifted the responsibility. I mean, I was one of those people in the 70s which argued here in Victoria that child protection should be the responsibility of the state and shouldn't be left to church welfare agencies or an organisation like the Children's Protection Society. The state had a legal and moral obligation to protect children. And the services back in the 70s and early 80s were pretty inadequate. And we pushed very hard for the government to actually take on this role, as we did in the whole area of youth reformatories and so forth, which were originally operated by churches. And I think that, yes, there has been a shift not only in Australia, but worldwide back to, if you like, the broader community sector, not-for-profit. And in Australia, the reality at the present time is that somewhere between 65 and 70% of community services are operated by faith-based agencies.
You mentioned that move in the 70s, or really starting in the 60s, for the state to take greater control. Is that because we had the first inklings in the late 60s and early 70s about institutional abuse of clients, and that was something that the churches really felt that the government had to step in to rectify that tragedy?
Look, that's true, Andrew, I believe, and I think that's often overlooked in the current debates about abuse of institutions. I mean, we recognised in the 60s and 70s that institutional abuse was there in many different forms. Latest research was also showing that institutions were not good. There was a significant influx of new professional groups into the community sector in the late 60s and early 70s, and I was one of those who came in with different training at that stage, not a member of the clergy, with visions about how we should be supporting children at home. We had a better understanding in the early 70s following the Henderson Report on poverty, and that all began to shape a new movement across Australia and Victoria, which I know well, in saying to the state, look, these are issues that cannot be left simply to not-for-profits or churches or community. Government must step in and ensure the protection of children, support for families, and assistance for those who are disadvantaged in our community. It was a broader social movement that I think was picked up and run very early with the Whitlam government in the early 70s.
What about the critique that progressives make, that accepting these government contracts leaves you open to all this management consulting ethos of key performance indicators, quality controls, all things that really are more about so-called throughput rather than actual quality, and that you're moving away from a humanitarian ethos?
Yes, Andrew, I think there's a strong element of truth in that. Many of the families and children that the agencies are working with have long-term disadvantage that goes back two or three or four generations. It's not like a hospital where you go to have your appendix out and you're fixed. Some of these changes will take generations to occur, but require also significant levels of government intervention. I mean, I was a little taken aback by Mike Smith of the ANZ Bank talking about how welfare should be redefined and people who need to move should just move, which was the implication. No understanding of family or community. They're the sorts of concerns that the welfare sector would be arguing and the churches generally about having a much broader vision of measurement.
I want to ask you about a very interesting comment that you make early on in the book, where you say this book is timely in the current global financial crisis because the values of Christian faith which have driven the market economy should be revisited to assess how they have been part of and contributed to the current preoccupation with economic growth at all costs. What do you mean by that? The churches have given license to materialism and to a laissez-faire economic agenda?
Yes, I think they certainly have, Andrew. I don't think they've spoken out enough about greed, about increased standard of living in this country and other Western countries where, you know, 80% of the wealth is owned by 20% of the people. The majority, over 2 billion people in the world, live on less than $2 a day. We keep improving our standard of living at the cost of others. And I don't think the church has been vigilant. And in many ways, I believe they have contributed to that ethos of better for us and less for others.
This point raises, I think, an inherent tension in your book, though. Because if the churches have been encouraging this laissez-faire free market economy, which essentially is about breaking down the welfare state, in a sense, the absence of the welfare state creates a space for the churches and their agencies. So isn't there a tension there?
Well, yes, there is potentially, Andrew. And I remember an economist many years ago saying to me, Ray, I don't know why you're so worried about laissez-faire market economies, because your job is to pick up the pieces from the market. Well, no, I don't think our job is to. Our job is to ensure that justice is available for all men and women, that fairness is around, that people are treated with dignity, and that we are generous and hospitable to our neighbour. We're not there to pick up the pieces and to mend the broken fences all the time.
The Reverend Dr. Ray Cleary. You'll find details of his book, Reclaiming Welfare for Mission, on the Religion and Ethics homepage at the RN website.